Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Max and friends, he says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from sex style to gossip.
Happy holiday, happy holiday. May the calendar keep ringing happy holidays to you.
If you're burdened down with trouble, if you're nervous or wear a thin, pack your load down the road, come to Holiday.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to another Max and Friends. You know, I used to say welcome back to another Sunday night of Max and Friends, but now since we're on every single podcast platform, I just say welcome to Max and Friends, because I don't know when you're all tuning in, but I do know for sure that I'm grateful that you all are tuning in. 12 years of being here. If it's your first time joining us, where have you been? Like, we're Communicator Awards later here, enjoying the platform. You know, it's funny because we were talking about Max and Friends the other day, and people are like, oh, I started a podcast, and then they give up, and then they don't realize all the work it goes into. We were like, even before podcasting, we were like when it was called internet radio, when everyone thought we were crazy, and publicists were like, what's internet radio? But anyway, follow me at Max Tucci on Instagram and on Twitter, at Max Tucci. Be part of the conversation. Happy holidays. Isn't it bizarre playing that? I feel like we should still be. Well, you know what? I'm glad we're at the holidays, because it means that many months have passed by, and that we're getting through all of this and we're moving forward and it's a good time. But if keeping inside is something that has been driving you crazy, I understand. I hear you. I see you. You matter. Know that for sure, because we're all part of the same club internationally and globally. We're all part of that club. But one thing I know for sure is that today, when I was at lunch with my niece and her friend, it was interesting because we were at this beautiful golf course. The sun is out. I'm in Florida. If you're asking, why are you in, out at the golf course? And they were on their cell phones. And I'm like, why are you on your cell phones? And it drove me crazy because earlier today, I watched a really fun trailer about a movie called Team Marco. And it was all about Bocce and how the grandfather was teaching his grandson. He was like, look, we're going to talk about it in the show because we got some great friends. But here's my summary of it. It was basically like grandfather was like, boy, you better take your tablet and all of your stuff that goes with it and lock it up and throw away the key, because you need to go outside and get some fresh air and learn Bocce, but also learn how to be with family and friends and in the environment. I know some of you are saying, well, we can't do that right now. But you know what? You can. Because if you can see it in your mind, you can create it in your reality. So what are you creating in your reality? Well, my guests tonight, they're joining us in just a minute. My pal Andrew Scrivani is joining me, and Giulio Vincent Gambuso will be here. And we're going to talk about the film Team Marco. So for all of you who are asking, what is the film? Well, you can go get it right now, because it's everywhere, nationwide, USA and Canada. And if you want to film, you know, I played Happy Holidays because now's the time where it's the holidays. And in a normal year, we would kind of all be with family and watching movies. So you might have done that for the last 8 or 9 months. But what I know is that you need to, like, just reinvent the wheel. This time, decorate the house in whatever, however you want to decorate it, and get some kind of holiday spirit in there and get family movies going and let Team Marco be part of that movie. So without any further ado, we're going to welcome my guest, Andrew Scrivani, to Max and Friends. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Hi, Max. I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited that you're here. I've known you for quite some time. And for those who don't know you, you got to go right now to his Instagram at Andrew Scrivani. He's a photographer. He's a director, producer, and of course, a New York Times contributor and a foodie. But you're just one cool dude. And we met at one of my favorite watering holes, Il Posto Accanto, which plays a part with the creation of this film. So how are you, Andrew, first and foremost?
I'm hanging in there, Max. I like your message of let's make the most of what we're situation we're in. And hopefully we're turning the corner and things are going to get better. But I'm happy that we're here to talk about the film with you because it's an exciting time for us.
It is an exciting time. And also for all of you who are like, listen, it's the holidays, cocktails, go on to Andrew's Instagram because his cocktails and his tutorial videos will show you how to make some really good cocktails to get you through the Christmas spirit with some spirits. But so let's set this up for everyone. You're involved in Team Marco. You meet Julio. Break it down. Give us the 411 so we could intro him to the show, so we could have him on and we could talk about a really great family film for the holiday season and also just for any season. So tell us about how you know Julio.
So we have to flash back quite a while, almost 20 years, where I was working as a teacher, and Julio at the school where Julio graduated from, called Staten Island Academy. It's a private school in Staten Island, and he came to work there in the marketing department, and I was doing some work with them as well because I was a photographer, And this is all prior to my food photography life. I was sort of doing both at that point. And Julio and I became friends. And then we both kind of moved forward in our careers. And I became a full-time photographer and went off to do the things that I was going to do. And he had a one-man show. He decided that he was going to be a director and went back to school. And flash forward 10 years. And he came back to New York from after being in LA and said, hey, I want to start this film company. I want to connect with my creative friends and get your input and your ideas and maybe you can help me out. And I saw that as an opportunity to get involved. And I liked working with him and we had a nice friendship. And that was almost 5 years ago now. And in the interim, we now work together pretty much every day. We've produced this film. He wrote and directed, and it's hopefully just the beginning of a partnership that was born of a friendship.
That's so cool. And what I love about this too, the film Team Marco, is that it centers around Italian American people, which I am, food, which I love, bocce, which I play, and values, which are so important that we all need to remember what they are because we're kind of forgetting what values are, especially being all together all this time. It's like, what are values? Well, you'll have to watch the film to find out about the values in Team Marco. So I saw the little trailer this morning. I was like, I'm not going to watch the film yet because I want to talk to you all so you can set it up so that when I watch it with the listeners that we all can tweet and Instagram and tweet me at Max Tucci and Instagram at Max Tucci. We'll carry the conversation going. But right now, let's welcome to the show Julio Vincent Gambuto. Welcome to Max and Friends.
Hello, Max. Hello, friends. It's good to be with you.
I'm excited that you're here. This is like Team Marco. Like, hello, this feels like a film. You know, I read some of this that you had footage from your grandparents back from the 60s and 70s. And I feel like we're flashing back to that time when all the groovy Italian grandfathers, all the nonnos were like sitting out in fresh air playing bocce and all the nonnas were at home cooking. It's a good reminiscing moment for me. So welcome to the show and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been an exciting time. And those things are still happening in some pockets around the country, mostly
around
town.
They are. And I wish they would happen to more. You know, in Florida, shuffleboard is like the bocce, right? Wow. Because they have all their, you know, they all come here to play their shuffleboard. And I'm like, I just want to replace it with a bocce field. But nonetheless, let's get into the genesis of Julio, how you got involved in film. Andrew's kind of set it up a little bit, but tell us about your story and how you got to where you are right now.
Sure. So I started as an actor, actually, and I grew up in the theater. I grew up doing school plays and college theater. And after school, I did theater in New York for very, very small audiences. I was performing with a number of theater companies around the city. And I went to an audition once for a commercial, and they asked me to sort of make an orgasmic face. And I was like, what? And it was for the shampoo. And I had this moment of realizing, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm in a room with 40 people who look exactly like me. There's nothing to distinguish me. And this is all we're being asked to do. So I decided at that moment, like, I wanted to do something that would let me stand out from the crowd and not have rather strange experiences like that. And so I wrote a one-man show, and I took some time. You know, one-man shows are always the butt of the joke for performers and for folks in the industry. But it was a really helpful process, really incredible process. And I put up this show. It was called Julie from Staten Island, and I did it in New York once a month for about 2 years. And I used to live in Brooklyn at the time, and I took my dining room chair, which was this little white chair, on the subway every time I did a show. At this black box theater in Times Square. And I did the show, and it was about being a fish out of water growing up on Staten Island as a young gay boy. And then I went to Harvard for college. So what it was like to go to Harvard as a working class kid. And it was fish out of water, fish out of water, fish out of water. And it was a fun show. It was a comedy. And we got a deal with an independent film producer to do it as a movie. And so I started writing the movie, and the 08 recession hit in 08, 09, and the whole thing fell apart. And, you know, Max, that those are the moments you got to really dig deep. And I know that a lot of your work centers on, you know, making these types of conscious changes and decisions in your life. And I had to sort of manifest my future in that moment and decided, you know what, I'm going back to school. I want more training. I want to know how to take more control of my creative career. And I went put myself in film school and went out to California, and you know, the train hasn't stopped yet.
And you're writing history as you speak. No, it's true. You know, in crisis, there's always opportunity. So for those of you who are going through this right now and thinking, oh shit, my whole life just stopped, and maybe you have a film in your mind or in your heart that you want to do, and you feel you can't do it. Julio, what advice do you give to people who are in that position that you were in, where it feels like the train stopped for a minute? What do you tell them?
Well, I tell them to make sure you feel it. You know, I think it's really important. I think when we come to those moments in our lives, we often try to avoid them. I certainly did it for a very long time. And I don't think you get the real juice out of the lemon that way. You know, you don't really get the best from what that moment is trying to give you. And I think you got to feel how awful that feels, unfortunately, to be able to turn the tide and to be able to dig deep and say, all right, I'm going to take this in a new direction. I'm going to try a new tactic. I'm going to approach this in a different way, in a different manner. And that certainly would happen in that moment for me.
Yeah. And for you, Andrew, what do you tell kids who are listening right now who think, like, shit, my train just stopped? How do I, like, get it back on track? What do you tell them?
Honestly, there's so many options to re-educate yourself. You know, like, I think that, you know, if you're on a school track, a lot of times you feel like, oh, I'm stuck in this major, or I'm stuck going in this direction. But the reality is there's so many opportunities to reinvent yourself and so many things to learn. And listen, we're sitting in front of screens constantly now, but behind those screens, there are a lot of opportunities to learn. So if you don't stop learning, then your opportunities don't dry up.
Yeah, it's so true. Well, you know, this is a great opportunity to talk about a fun movie called T-Mark. If you're all tuning in, my guests tonight are Julio Vincent Gambuto and Andrew Scrivani, and we're talking about the film T-Marco because it's that good of a film that you all need to watch it. The film has such a diverse age group. It says here, like, from 9 to 100 and something. So before we get into all of this, let's talk about the process of releasing a film during a pandemic, and then we'll talk about creating the film. How was it to release this during a pandemic?
As stressful as everything else.
I can imagine. But, you know, it's funny because I, Andrew knows, I have a book coming out, and we pushed it from 21 to 22, and I was like, was that the right decision? And it just felt right for 22 because, you know, like we want to go out and do cooking shows and obviously promote it. But with a film, you could take it, you could be home. It's what people are doing right now. And it's funny because the irony of the film is to not watch your tablets, but on your tablet, you want to watch them with this. So tell us about the process from start to finish for you about production and how it was working on Staten Island, because the film was entirely shot on set, right, in Staten Island.
It was, yeah. Both Andrew and I are from there and both grew up there. And so it's a place that's really special to the both of us in different ways and to the both of us in some similar ways as well. And I think it's just it's home, it's a city, it's in New York City, but it's also a more suburban place. It's, you know, it's twice the size of Manhattan. People don't really know that. Uh-huh. It's, 65% reserved land. It's a very green place. So it was wonderful to be there. The whole process really started about 4 years ago. I started a company called Burrow 5. Andrew's one of our executive producers and decided that he wanted to join me in this process, which has been wonderful. And the production company set out to raise money to make our first three films in the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. And this is our debut feature. And so the fundraising process took about a year and a half. And then once we were ready to go, and, you know, that was a lot of dinners, a lot of handshaking,
yeah,
a lot of when we used to gather in restaurants and things like that. And then
the good old days,
good old days, yeah.
Just last year,
exactly. Right. Before in normal times. and then once that process was complete, we greenlit the movie, you know, with our lawyers and accountants and whomever. And to go into production. And so that pre-production process is about 3 to 6 months. Our physical producer, Sam, moved from Los Angeles to New York to work with us and lived on Staten Island. And pre-production lasted about January through April of that year. And in that period, you know, you're prepping everything. You're getting permits, you're finding locations, you're hiring your staff, you're really gearing up to make the actual product. And then you go into production, which for us was about 5 weeks in the summer of 2018. And it was 95 degrees, 105 degrees, whatever it was.
Staten Island, 105 degrees, too.
Yeah, it was hot.
But let me ask you a question, Julia. When was it that you thought, like, this is really happening?
Well, to be honest with you, Max, the moment didn't come until about halfway through the shoot. It was probably 2 weeks in. And, you know, a film set is particularly noisy in that there's so many things happening, not the volume level, but the actual just busyness of it all. And so I hadn't really had a moment to really take in what was happening. And then this one day we had where we were shooting the sequence where Nono, the grandfather and the grandson are riding on the back of a red Vespa through the trees in this park. And because it was just them on set that day, we didn't have a big crew and it was also raining. And so it was a very different type of day. And in that moment, I watched them ride this Vespa through the trees and I kind of just burst into tears because I was like, wow, like this is happening. You know, yeah. This was an idea, you know, a number of years ago and now we're actually shooting this scene. So, yeah, sometimes for me, it just takes a moment of quiet for those realizations to come.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I love that. And for you, Andrew, when was it real for you? Because I know you put work into this, too. And being an executive producer, how many things don't ever come to fruition? So when this finally had its wings and was flying, what did you think?
You know, there's two moments. The first one was during the white draft, the first draft of the film. I was sitting in Blue Bottle Coffee on Clinton Street, and I'm reading it, and I'm making notes, and I had a scheduled appointment with Julio to talk about it later. And we were texting while I was reading it. And then he was like, I want to know now. I want to know what you think now. And we got right on the phone at that moment and we were talking about it. And it was the first realization that, oh my God, we're actually making a movie. And I know that was super early in the process, but it was really exciting for me at that point. And the set, and the second point was the first day on set with the full cast. It was just, it was amazing. You know, like there was just the people were there. It was all this, everything you can imagine what it felt like to be on a movie set, and being behind the monitor on a movie set. It was just, that point was really exciting, and it just slammed me right in the face. It's like, wow, we're waist deep in this now. We better do a good job.
And then meetings took place. And I love that the meetings took place. I have a note here that the meetings took place at our favorite place, El Posto Canto. So, of course, you had the blessing of El Posto Canto to make this really work.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we had meetings there. We met potential crew members there. We met potential cast there. We had so many meetings there while we were filming this, because my studio is in the East Village. And quite often we were kind of doing, I was doing things around there, and or we were working. And then we would just go and meet at Il Posto to have some wine and to talk about it and meet some, and, you know, meet people, because it was really convenient. And it sort of became like a backdrop of this. And we celebrated there after we wrapped the film.
We
celebrated there and we got really drunk, and it was amazing.
Of course it was. Now, listen, everyone who's listening right now, if you're in New York, please, 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 please go support El Posto Canto. It's a little local restaurant. Like, think local. Don't do Uber Eats. Don't do all of those Grubhubs, whatever. Walk your ass over there. Call them up. Order food and walk it home. Please support. We have to, like, keep our local places open, okay? So there's my little disclaimer for that, because it's true. It's up to us to keep New York alive. But keeping Staten Island alive is something that's always been, because I remember my grandfather used to go to Staten Island. People didn't know this. From Delmonico's to Staten Island to farms there to get produce and meats and for the restaurant. And then he would bring it back. And then if he didn't go to Staten Island, he went to Bridgeport, Connecticut. But people have a big misconception of Staten Island. So, Julia, why don't you paint the picture a little bit about Staten Island and why it was so important to film there and create the movie there?
Sure. It's our home. It's a really beautiful place. It's, you know, I think it gets a bad rap in film and TV and certainly in the media, because it's a really unique place. I mean, people are never really sure, is it the city? Is it the suburbs? Is it conservative? Is it liberal? There's only five ways to get on and off of it. So, you know, a lot of us spend many years trying to get off of it. and then come later in our lives to realize how beautiful it really was to grow up there, and then try through ways through art to get back onto it. So it's been at least that kind of roller coaster for me in my life. And but it's a great place. It's a warm place, and it's a community-minded place, and it's a family-friendly place. And I think that, you know, especially now during this period where people are you know, really sort of starving for connection, you know, we certainly didn't design the movie to come out right now, but I think it speaks about community and friendship in a really beautiful way. And we loved shooting there. I mean, it's within the 30-mile zone for film production, which essentially means, you know, we're still in New York City for purposes of, you know, hiring our crew and working with artists who are from the city. And so, you know, it's a really unique place to shoot a movie, because every street looks a little bit different, and there are different types of architecture, and there are parks, and, you know, we shot our movie, 50% of the movie takes place outside in a park, and we shot in about 6 or 7 parks around the island. So, you know, we had the opportunity to show off sort of the landmarks that we know and love, the places that we went to as children or in our teenage years and really adored. And then we got to show off other parts that people really don't know about. Which is, you know, how pastoral it is and how, you know, nature sort of envelops you as you ride around, or if you hike through the parks and the woods. And so I wanted to show that. I mean, I think other people show the other parts of Staten Island that we all know very well, but I think I wanted to show a different side of it. Mm-hmm. And I think we accomplished that.
Yeah, and is it true that it was the first feature film entirely set and shot on Staten Island?
It is. Borough Hall loves this
fact. Wow, and, that's cool.
Yeah. And I said to them, is that true? And Borough Hall said, yes, it is. It's entirely shot on the island, entirely set on the island. And, you know, we worked with about 35 organizations and businesses on the island to make the movie. We really called on the community to contribute and be a part of it. And and sort of take the train with us. And so that's been a really gratifying, wonderful
part. That's fantastic. And for you, Andrew, how was it to actually be on set in Staten Island?
You know, so a good portion of the film is shot at the bocce courts in South Beach. And my family is originally from South Beach. And I spent my formative years on the boardwalk. That was the backdrop of a good portion of our scenes, riding my bike, going to the beach, spending all this time down there with my friends, and then having, especially the big scenes that we shot there. It was really remarkable, like sort of to be able to share what our upbringing was like and be able to bring that perspective to the film. And we had a lot of conversations about that, and it meant a lot, you know, like what Julio just said about, you know, the places that we spent our childhood or the businesses that we like to go to. And we got to share that with this big audience, which, you know, the idea that Staten Island, you know, there's a perception of Staten Island. And I think that we were able to show that perception isn't always reality.
Yeah, because there's a stank on Staten Island. Keep it real. People think there's like this stank on it. Meanwhile, it's like a cool place that people don't even know. Like, I used to take the ferry with my grandmother from New York to Staten Island, the free ferry, mm-hmm. just so that at nighttime when you would come back, you would see you see the whole entire city from Staten Island. And it's like, we used to do that. And the aquarium at the Staten Island ferry when you get off is like, it's a cool thing to do and it's free, people. So I don't know if it's still happening, but if you can jump on the Staten Island ferry, go for a free ride and come back and see the city. Because the Staten Island gets to see New York. They get to see New York. But, you know, it's interesting.
It's the cheapest cruise they'll take out of New York.
Exactly, exactly. So, all right, let's talk about the film. Because, Julio, tell us about young Marco and his obsession with video games. And then all of a sudden, his life just completely changed. The doorbell rings and nonno, grandpa's there. Tell us about the story and what compelled you to write it.
Sure. It's about a young boy who's obsessed with his iPad and his video games. And one of the things you learn early on in the movie is that his parents are divorced or separated. And so the way that his father communicates with him is through text messages and pretty much text messages only. And so he's really, really tethered to this iPad and to his tech in order to have that connection. And then you learn that his father is actually a video game executive and creates video games. And so the video game that he's obsessed with is based on his father. So, you know, it's really sort of about like the emotional connection. I mean, for the film, we had to exaggerate that and dramatize it, but it's about the emotional connection that kids have to these devices and to technology. And but through a number of circumstances in the movie and in the plot, the grandfather comes to live with them. And the grandfather thinks it's crazy that he's always on a tech. And so he drags him outside to the park, puts him on a Vespa, takes him to the local park and teaches him how to play bocce ball. So, you know, bocce is the oldest game in the world. It is, it started out simply being played with rocks. So it really came to represent all that was old world, all that was old school, all that was, you know, about the generation that, you know, we would consider to be our grandparents.
You know, it's interesting because, again, like I said, today I was at lunch with my niece and her friend, and they were on their phones and like life was happening. You know, men were playing golf, people were playing tennis. It was like life was happening and they're so consumed with their cell phones where it's like they're missing out in reality what's happening at that moment, you know, with something that is in like a whole nother, I guess that's their reality, their moment. I'm not judging Lily, but I'm just saying, I'm observing. So how was it for your actor who played Marco? Did he know how to play bocce or did you guys have to teach him?
Andy, you want to jump in? I think you know this one well.
Yeah, well, none of our youth cast knew anything about bocce. we had to teach them from the perspective of what the game was, how to hold the ball, how to throw the ball. And some of this plays out on camera, which is really nice. You know, they're learning as they go and they're getting a little better at it as they go on. So that was pretty organic. So the joy of watching sort of these somewhat awkward kids figuring out this, you know, this sport and watching these older men who are just wizards at the game and seeing the dichotomy there and watching it play out in real life and then being able to film it and have it incorporated into this movie was pretty special.
I can imagine. Now, did I see you, Andrew, like in one of the in the film, in the trailer?
Yep, you did. I am in the first scene in the movie. I look startled and terrified in the backseat of a limousine. I was getting direction from my buddy here on how not to look too wide-eyed. That was the extent of my acting skill, which was not to look too wide-eyed. That was about it.
So you make it in the film and you make it in the trailer. You're like a star now.
I got lucky to be in the trailer. That's for sure.
Right. That's so, I'm like, is that Andrew? And there you were in the limousine. So there's so much to talk about. One thing I want to talk about too, because I love them, is Rainbow Cookies. Why is that in my notes? What plays the role about Rainbow Cookies and why are they so important to the film?
Well, Rainbow Cookies are the dessert or the Italian cookie that Marco and his grandfather bond over in the movie. And Marco prefers the gluten-free version and his grandfather prefers the regular version. And so it's sort of a clash of generations, even with the food that they eat. And the Rainbow Cookie is sort of this thread throughout the movie and comes to really represent and symbolize their friendship. And so we wanted to pick something that, you know, was special to us, that was special from at least the Italian-American tradition. And, you know, I love pannoli cookies, but Rainbow Cookies.
Oh, my God. Pannoli cookies are so good. They're all good. So what's your favorite bakery on Staten Island? Let's give them a shout out.
Where did you get this? This is a loaded question.
Of course it is. Where did the cookies come from?
Well, the cookies come from Renato's on Forest Avenue. Also, we shot at Belly Bocce, which is in Tottenville on the South Shore. They were the bakery that was featured in the film. And it's really funny that you say that. And what Andrew and I are laughing at is that we had a rainbow cookie contest on the island to sort of determine who we would feature in the movie. And it was particularly controversial. And people get very, it's like asking a New Yorker, like, where's your favorite pizza? It just doesn't go over well.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, so where is your favorite pizza?
Mine is Joe's on West 4th or on Bleecker.
What about you, Andrew?
I like Nunzio's on Highland Boulevard in Staten Island.
Oh, look, you went right to the island. You're like, forget New York.
Oh, no. If you're going pizza, I'm like six deep on Staten Island.
All right. Okay. So that's good. But all right. So let's talk about, what do I want to talk about? There's like, I just love when a film is like this because it's intergenerational relationships, technology. It's about family. And then Leonardo Maltin called it a life-affirming feel-good movie. When you heard that, what did that feel inside for you, Julio?
Oh my God. I mean, this was possibly the greatest moment of my career. I teared up. I mean, he's a hero of mine. And, growing up, certainly watched him and his reviews all the time. So it was really, really, it's funny because once you start, making art for a national conversation, you have to be subject to this kind of, process and reviews. People are going to review it. It's going to be in the Times. And I was very nervous about it. But, Leonard Maltin, he's a professor at USC. So I did film school at USC. And so I took his class, and there's about 300 or 400 people in it. So I've never met him, but I remember looking at him one day and thinking, "I'm going to make a movie one day, and this man is going to review it." And it happened. And
oh my God, that was a conscious creation. I love it.
Absolutely. It was like, oh my gosh. So funny enough, we have a press team on the movie, and so they were reaching out to reviewers across the country, and I had gotten an update that Leonard Maltin had, gotten the movie, but he wasn't sure if he could review it. And I was very nervous about whether or not he would. And then I got this message through the publicist that said, Leonard saw it. He and his wife are still crying. He called it life affirming, and he's going to review it. And you know, I almost fell off my chair. So it was a really wild moment.
No, that's a good feeling. But I love that, you know, it's true. If we have the ability to create our reality. So when we say things like that, you know, there's unconscious creation and conscious creation. So we have to be careful what we say because it does happen. So I love that you were like, he's going to review my film. And then he did. And not only did he review it, but he gave you like glowing stars reviewing it too. Yeah. So there must have been a huge joy in that. How was casting the film for you? Because you have a huge range from like 2 to 85 years old. So how was it to cast this film?
It was really fun. I mean, we did it. It was a joint effort between myself and the producers and the executive producers and our casting team. And so, you know, there's about 4 or 5 of us in the room for every audition. And, you know, I know what I'm looking at from a director's perspective and everyone comes at it from a slightly different perspective. But it's a tough process, but it's really, you know, as they say, kind of 80-90% of my job is to make sure that we put the right people in the right roles. Mm-hmm. And Owen Vaccaro, who plays Marco, is a really talented young actor. And he came to us through an agent, but also through a recommendation. My sister had seen him in Daddy's Home with Mark Wahlberg. And also he was in The House with a Clock in Its Walls from Universal and loved him. And said, you've got to get this kid. And so I auditioned him and immediately I knew, you know, he's fantastic and he would make the perfect Marco. And then Anthony Patelis, who plays the grandfather, he just walked into an audition. He's a theater actor here in New York. He's worked for decades, without any large film roles. But he's incredible in the movie and he's so, so good. In the room, you know, auditioning, and then when he got on set, was the consummate professional. So this is the role he's been waiting for a very long time, and it makes me very, very happy that he, is so incredibly good in it and getting all the attention that he's getting. Mm. And then Anastasia Gagnas-Gellin, who plays the mom, she also auditioned in New York. It was actually really funny because she walked into the audition, and she had just had a baby 2 weeks before, and she looked at us, and she said, ah, what you see is what you get. It's all I can do today. and that's what we wanted. You know, we wanted that energy. I wanted the mom to be that frustrated with the things that are happening in her life. So it worked out very well. So I don't know if Andy has other reflections about being in that room from a different perspective, but that was mine.
Well, I mean, there's a few things that remind. I mean, that particular moment when we met Anastasia and when we met Jacob, who plays Fred in the film, it felt like what Julio and Barack wrote jumped off the page when Jacob walked in the room. Like, Jacob had auditioned to be Marco, but he was Fred from the second he opened his mouth. And that was such a special moment. He was literally like the first person we cast in the whole film. And then the second thing was we were sitting in the office one day and we're trying to fill out the smaller roles. And we got to the role of Gus. And Gus is just a guy who's sort of overweight and sits and sleeps on the bench during the bocce matches throughout the whole film. He doesn't have any lines. You never really see him other than he's just this guy sitting in the corner sleeping. I said, I know a guy who's perfect for that role. He was born to play that role. So I picked up the phone and I called my father.
You know, I was going to ask you about locals because you also have like a lot of locals in the film, but you had like full-on family local.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And he absolutely loved the experience. It was so special to be able to include him in this, other than the fact that he's also an executive producer on the film. But the reality was getting him involved on the day-to-day. He's a yenta. Like, he sat there and he chatted up all the guys and he's jawing with the bocce guys and he loved the kids and he was talking to Owen and he was just the life of the party, other than the fact that he slept through the whole movie. So it was this funny sort of thing happening there. Trying to get him to shut up just to do his sleeping scene was one of the funnier things we had to do.
So I would imagine you have like a gag roll. No, is it out there?
There is actually. The funny thing is we had this blooper reel that we showed at our wrap party that we're trying to make sure we can vet to, or clear so we can put it on social media because it'd be really fun.
Absolutely. Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the movie Team Marco. You can go learn more. Go to teammarco.movie. But we're talking about it here right now. So stick with us here. We're just hanging out, having a good old conversation. You know, we're talking about the locals in Staten Island. How was it to, like, for you, Julio, to like be in Staten Island, to like it says is that your middle school, your high school, and then the locals? What was that energy like when all the locals were on set?
It was so fun. I mean, you know, it was so special for all of us and for myself. And my mom is in the movie as well. And my sister and my grandmother actually makes an appearance in these vintage film reels from the 1960s. So, you know, I think there was just a real sense of family throughout the whole production. Obviously, we had, you know, trained actors in most of the parts, but you know, to be able to include people in the community, to be able to include our families, to be able to really kind of reach out and make it a community project was really fun, because at the end of the day, that's the message of the movie. So,
yeah.
You know, to be able to sort of live into that promise, you know, felt really, really good and was just really joyful for me. I mean, the surreal part was having our LA crew, you know, go to the diners that we went to in high school, or you know, going to the, you know, like, oh, this is where we came after prom and stuff right. like that. You know,
it's not Mel's; it's Staten Island's Diners.
Exactly.
No, it's cool. You know, I love the fact that you mentioned your grandmother and your grandfather, and that you have footage from them. I like, to me, I'm obsessed with family footage from, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. So the question I'm going to ask you, Julio, is when your grandmother and your grandfather first saw the film, what were you observing when you were watching them?
Well, my grandfather, unfortunately, is deceased, and he's the one who left me the films. My
grandmother, the films are in there. Sorry, yeah. The films are in
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Grandfather sure. made a cameo.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. He will live forever now, which is exciting.
Exactly.
My grandmother is 95, and she was the one who we put all these film reels up on the dining room wall, and she helped me pick out what to put in the movie, which was really special. And then when she saw the movie for the first time, she saw an early cut, and she said, Julie, my family calls me Julie, Julie, it's really boring. I said, okay, Grandma, give it to me. What do you got? And she was looking at a cut that had no music, no dialogue in certain scenes. You know, it wasn't finished. So I was trying to explain that to her, but she didn't care. She was just like, I don't understand why there's no one talks in this part of it. I'm like, well, we haven't put in the actual audio yet.
I love it. But speaking of music, you did add a 32-piece orchestra to the score. How did that all manifest?
It was so, you know, creatively, you know, we had to make certain decisions about budget because we're an independent film. And so I knew that we couldn't have the entire score recorded that way. And so I chose to divide it into the music that was specifically for the grandfather and his themes. And those we recorded with live instruments. And then music that was specific to Marco. And those were all recorded with electronic instruments. So it was a nice divide that actually, you know, obviously supported the divide in the movie. And our composer out in Los Angeles, Jacques Brotbar, is incredibly talented. And he wrote the score and he said, I have a 32-piece orchestra that I can get to record it. And I said, go for it. So they were in Budapest, beaming in to him in Los Angeles, who was beaming in to us in New York. And I was giving notes to him in LA, which were then being relayed to Budapest. It was a wild experience. But so, so fun.
And then it's also won some film festivals. So how was it? Okay, we don't have that much time, but I wish we had more, because I love independent films. And when they win festivals and when you have a 32-piece orchestra and footage from your grandmother, it makes it just like all the better. So I have so many more questions, but we're going to have to make them short because I'm getting a little bird in my ear tweeting, say we got to wrap it up. So I'm going to go into this. For you, Andrew, what was it like seeing the film complete?
You know, we saw it in multiple ways, you know, but just the first time we saw the film complete with, you know, even though some of the music was temporary and, you know, we still had to do some things, it was remarkable to see what we had worked so hard on in script form just become what it was going to be, and seeing the actors sort of become the roles and seeing the scenes become like, and were how they work together, you know, because we don't shoot the movie in sequence. So you don't really know what it's going to look like until you actually sit down and look at an edit. And it was just you know, like the fruition of all of this hard work, all of this, you know, all of the energy that all these people had spent and watching, you know, in particular watching Julio watch the movie and seeing how all of that sort of energy that he put into all of us and how he pushed us all to make this movie better every single day. It was really gratifying. It was super gratifying. And as proud as I am of all these other things I've done in my career, this one sort of is right at the top of the list.
Right. They're like kids. You can't pick the best.
No, it's hard, but this is definitely one of my favorite children.
Awesome. And for you, Julia, what was it like to actually see the film in the can complete? Did you watch it by yourself at first? Did you watch it with an audience? How did you view it?
So the first time I saw it was with our editor, Nick Wright. And, you know, we had been working on it in piecemeal. And so that was the first time that we saw the whole thing together. And it was beautiful. I mean, it was such a moment, you know, to realize that, wow, we had really done this. And, you know, the process is so long and so intricate and so complex in moments that, you know, sometimes you just forget like what you're driving at. And then to sit in a room in the dark and turn this huge TV on and watch 90 minutes of something that you created out of thin air is really moving and fulfilling. So I'm really proud of it. I can't imagine what this process is like if you make something that you're not, you know, sort of ready, willing, and able to shout from the rooftops about. And I'm thrilled, and I'm just so grateful to all the people who joined, you know, and helped make it. And our team was incredible. Andrew was incredible. Our assistant director and our cinematographer and everyone. I mean, these are really, really talented people who, you know, they're always just looking for opportunities to show off how good they are. And I think they did it really well in this.
Well, you know, there's a saying, like attracts like. So brilliance is all put together on the film, T. Marco. So before we wrap it up, I'll throw it to Andrew first. What does bocce mean to you?
What does bocce mean to me? You know, I remember playing bocce as a kid. I learned, you know, at family picnics and barbecues, and I had kind of, it had kind of fallen out of my life before making this movie. And the fact that it sort of found its way back in the way that it did was really special and kind of brought back memories of my grandparents, who are all deceased at this point. And I'm the namesake of my grandfather, Andrew, Andrea. And, you know, I thought about him a lot during all of this, and sort of bocce was the conduit for that.
Yeah. And where can people find you on social media, Andrew?
I'm at Andrew Scrivani. If you could spell my name, you can find me.
Super. And for you, Julio, what does bocce mean to you?
Well, I'll give you a line from the movie, which is, you know, the point of bocce is to get close. So get close.
Get close. And,
yeah, that's, I think, it certainly is what we're all doing this year, trapped at home. And I think the movie's message is just that, you know, go through this life with people who matter. So.
That's right. And where can people find you on social media?
So I'm on Instagram at Julio Vincent Gambuto, Julio like Julio, Vincent Gambuto. And also on Facebook and juliovincent.com.
And teammarco.movies for more information about Team Marco. Hashtag it, get the conversation going, watch the film, because it is a life-affirming, feel-good, I'm adding to it, must-see movie. So I thank you both for getting close with me here tonight at Max and Friends. Bocce brought us together even without playing it.
Thanks, Max.
I appreciate you both. Happy holidays. And to our grandfathers that aren't here that are watching over us, see, this is what we're doing. So nice keep thought. Watching over us, right? Keep watching over us. I thank you both for being here. Have a beautiful evening and have a wonderful holiday season. I feel so weird saying that, but happy holidays.
Thank you. You too, Max. Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great Max. Night. My pleasure. Thank you. I love you all for tuning in tonight. Remember, Max and Friends, you can now listen to it on every single podcast platform. Happy holidays. We're going to play that song. Now let's play Jingle Bells. So Ronan, before I let them go, get Jingle Bells ready. And really, this is what I'm going to leave you all with. I love you. I see you. I hear you. You matter. Get close with one another. You know, if you're fighting with someone or if you're having an argument with someone, put that shit down and just call them, love one another. And just like Julia said, get close. We got one life to live. And if we do it right, once is enough. I love you all for listening to Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Good night and good karma. And remember to take life to the max. Jingle bells. And I'll see you next Sunday here on Max and Friends.
Riding one horse open sleigh, jingle bells.